Now taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good. All 100% free.
What if I had three jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live. Must start and file in app by 2/18.
Searching for something to put a smile back on your face. Just remembering unusual times that can come from an unusual place. You need a partner for the ride, 'cause everybody needs a Clyde. So set your worries to the side. Just ask, say the word. Pretend I got a hand I can lend, 'cause when you really need a friend, just ask. Shit 90 shows taught me.
Are you ready to slay
Shit
another day? So are we.
Not filmed.
Welcome back to Shit 90 Shows Taught
audience.
Me. I'm Jess Sterling here with my co-host, Sarah Humphrey. Sarah, how are you?
Jess, I'm terrible. I can't get all these voices out of my head. One person's telling me I'm hot. The other says that their butt's too big. What am I supposed to be doing? It just won't stop. I'm going to have a mental breakdown. A menti bee, as the kids say.
This does feel like a superpower you would enjoy having, is being able to hear other people's thoughts.
Yeah. Well, okay. Like, it's honestly the good and the bad, right? Because, of course, I would want to give this a go. But the second somebody says something mean about me in their head, I'll just have to cocoon all night. I'll be so upset. So as long as other people are talking shit about other people and not me, then I'm good.
Yeah. Well, we are not alone today. We have someone eavesdropping on our podcast right now, AJ Mass. AJ, how are you?
But if I'm on your podcast, then does that make me you? Or are we all just you? Are we all just on a podcast? Oh my gosh, I'm having such an existential crisis right now.
I wish we could all have Oz's thoughts when someone was trying to like eavesdrop on our brain, because I appreciated that his thoughts were like, if Buffy hears our thoughts and she knows all thoughts, then she is everyone. It's incredible. Of course, we're covering Buffy season 3, episode 18, Earshot. This episode was wild. I do want to give a content warning just up at the top, because there is some like school shooter sort of stuff in this episode, kind of. And apparently, and AJ, we love when we have guests to give historical background. Apparently, this episode was like delayed because of Columbine in the real time. Is that true?
Yes. So this episode actually did not air as season 3, episode 18. It actually did not air until 1 week before the season 4 premiere. Completely was pulled out of order. Columbine happened just the week before this episode was going to air, and it had already been like a month before there was an episode. They had planned a break. Back in the old days, there were reruns. What they would do is they'd take a few weeks off and then replay the last three episodes over again so that everyone could catch up. This was supposed to be the episode, and Columbine happened, and given the subject matter of this episode, which does involve the potential for a school shooting, the network thought, hey, maybe we shouldn't show this right now. And to everyone's credit, the show itself, Joss and the people all said, you know what, that's probably the right thing to do. So they were prepared to wait a few weeks. Unfortunately, this is America, and there were more school shootings. So what happened was they were planning to air it again, and the networks were still saying, well, maybe it is still soon, and maybe again it's still soon. They ended up airing episode 19, episode 20, and they kept pushing this back, saying, you know, because this could have still fallen in. Happened right after the last episode, but you don't really need to see this one for continuity's sake. Yeah, they mentioned the Books of Ascension in this, so it is the next episode. They mentioned the whole angel, you know, fooling Faith. It's in here, but there's no, like, real plot development for the main story arc, so you could pull it out. They even got to the two-part finale, and I'm not going to spoil the two-part finale for you. Obviously, I wouldn't do that. But after week one of the two-part finale, which aired on two separate weeks, there was another school shooting in Georgia.
Oh, my gosh.
And so they actually delayed part two of the two-part finale until after all of schools in the country had closed. Even though there was no school shooting storyline in that, it's no spoiler to say it's graduation day. It's about a high school graduation, and there's going to be some kicky punchy going on in the episode. That's what Buffy is. So they just said, you know what, let's just wait until July. So we really, it was like a 2 month gap between part one and part two of the season finale. And then they finally just said, look, it's September. Let's just show this episode. By then, maybe, after a summer of no school shootings, we can get this over with. And so they were lucky. There were no school shootings in September. They waited till November to have the next school shooting in America. So, it's a heavy topic. Obviously, the more things change, the more they stay the same in terms of this, in terms of people not addressing the real root issue, because the real root issue of school shootings is not television shows about vampires. Perhaps showing something that is actually not about school shootings and actually does address the mental health of students in a very interesting and I think very rational way. This was a tough one. So we didn't air this one. We didn't see this one. We almost never saw this one, which would have been a shame because there's some really good stuff in here.
Yeah, that's wild. Like I knew that it, like, there was something going on in the production side of things where this one was filmed and aired out of order. But especially now, thinking about Oz's line about school shootings in this episode, about how he talks about how they're, like, you know, they're a fad right now, or however he phrases it. I wish that that wasn't still the case, like, for our world. Like, I wish we could look back and be like, what a thing of the past. Unfortunately, it's not. And so that's why we wanted to warn people up front. But hearing the historical context is really helpful, because you're right. I'm trying to think, like, there's really not a ton beyond the Buffy and Angel, like, Buffy is feeling some sort of way about Angel having kissed Faith and all of that, right? That is kind of like the only thing happening in, like, the main storyline and the Mayor Ascension stuff, I guess. But
we don't see the Mayor or Faith this episode. So it's as close to having a Monster of the Week episode as we would get at the end of a Buffy season, I would assume. Like, this would have been our kind of breather episode, even though it's a heavy topic, but our breather episode, because kind of like Buffy is like go, go, go with its main plot, villains, and like our hero stuff. So it kind of, in a way, worked out. I think, like, I'm personally happy that, like, I get to watch it in an order that makes sense, especially when it comes to the previously ons, because I feel as though I'm curious how they handled the previously ons, maybe when they eventually did come back for whatever episode is coming next. I don't know if that's choices or something else. I don't know, like, did they choose a different, like, did they not show previously on? Like, I'm curious how they wound up doing that.
Yeah, no, they showed a previously on. It just, I mean, they just obviously didn't show anything from this episode. But like I said, you don't really miss a lot from the main storylines with this episode. But when they did decide to finally show this one in late September, they basically said, you know, they said, this is a very special presentation. This is like, you know, we're going to show the episode. They handled it with kid gloves. You know, they were very much like, look, we're showing you this. There were warnings up front. There were a couple of stations that still refused to show it. It was handled as if it was like, look, we're going to show it to you because we filmed it. And they kind of spun it more into the, hey, you know, we know these things happen in our country. We know these things are happening. This is just our take on it. And, you know, it's a shame because Jaina Svensson, I spoke with Jaina Svensson about this episode, amongst other things. I interviewed her for my part of my first book that I wrote. And I specifically asked her about this episode. And she's like, you know, she was glad they pulled it because this is supposed to be a funny episode. Like, obviously, yeah, there's serious stuff, but there's also a lot of funny stuff in here. You know, and obviously at the time, 1 week after Columbine, this would not have hit the right way.
No, especially lines like Xander, right? He's the one, and again, not to pick on Xander, but he does say something like, who hasn't thought of like shooting up a school, right? Like, that is not going to be something that anyone would laugh at so soon after.
Well, there's imagery in this episode beyond like obviously Columbine, you know, which, you know, the shooting took place in the cafeteria, which is where Buffy hears the I'm going to, yeah, tomorrow I'll kill them all. Even the choice of a clock tower for the shooting is reminiscent of the University of Texas shootings from the 70s. So it's like, you know, there have been school shootings, and that's why they thought of this episode. As Jade said, look, it's not like we were unique in coming up with this plot line. These things had happened in America. They just hadn't happened so recently and with yeah, such a, yeah, an impact as Columbine did. And of course, you know, yeah, should Columbine have been the game changer? Yes. But then, you know, yeah, should Sandy Hook have been the game changer? Yes. Like, you know, when are we going to have a game changer? I don't know that we will, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I feel as though the school shooting or threat is very much like the least interesting part of this episode. So I kind of wish there was a world where they could have reshot some scenes and re-edited it so that it could have everything that's interesting that happens with Buffy, like listening and reading in on minds and how that affects her. I understand that there's like has to be like a real threat as to like, let's get this into action, but it's literally like the least interesting part of all of this.
I totally agree. And I think to that point, I also think it like doesn't make a ton of sense. Like, it really feels like they ham-fisted in the like school shooter aspect of it, because I guess we could talk about this part and then focus on more of the like fun mind reading stuff, but like who they think it's going to be, right? They land on a couple different suspects, none of which end up being the actual correct person, but Jonathan, aka Doyle from Gilmore Girls, he like the whole thing with him is he's standing in this like tower where he can look out a window very clearly, and he has a rifle. And like, I'm so sorry, but like a rifle of all guns doesn't make a ton of sense to do what he is talking about doing. Like, it just doesn't make a ton of sense. And I feel like we could have addressed the Jonathan of it all, right? He feels overlooked, he feels ignored, he feels like no one even notices he exists. I think we still could have retained that like really lovely conversation with Buffy and him talking about like kind of connecting on that level without having a school shooter storyline. I just don't think it was necessary. And maybe you just make it something else even, you know, because there could still be a threat to the school without it having to include, I mean, like guns, right?
I think it would have been like any threat to a school if it was around Columbine. So I don't think like it's the threat. And I think that if we just focused on like, oh, Buffy hears that there is somebody who is struggling with mental health issues, but she can't figure it out, when that it removes the like action hero end of it. So it sounds more like I don't know, like a Veronica Mars episode than like a Buffy yeah, episode, like, you know what I mean, where it's just like, where's the like the big supernatural bad thing that's going to happen,
and jumping into action, doing yeah, a backflip yeah, onto the roof of the school yeah, in front yeah, of yeah, everyone.
Yeah. But, like, I'm not a writer, so, like, thankfully, like, nobody's having me write a Buffy episode. But, like, I think that, like, it could have been interesting to focus on, like, something else. But, yeah, like, it's a school. It's kind of like you're not going to have I've never seen Degrassi, but I'm assuming then Degrassi, there was a school shooter.
Oh, yeah. The Drake, famously. Okay. Jimmy.
So yeah. It's like when there is a high school show, like, I don't think that we saw that in Boy Meets World.
No, they never got into
Dawson's
that sort of a...
Creek, but so. They had their own demons to work on. They didn't have to deal with Hellmouth demons.
Actual demons. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I hear what you're saying. One of the reasons I really enjoy this episode, I mean, I enjoy every episode that Jaina Svensson writes. I think she's amazing. And so I love her episodes in particular because she usually does the funny ones. She did Band Candy from this season. And so I just think the episodes, and there's usually, at least from this point on, there's one each season where the big bad or the monster of the week is not supernatural. It's a human. And I think when Buffy steers into that and says, yeah, there's all these horrible things, but the real world's pretty bad too. And you don't have to live on a hellmouth for there to be a really game-changing situation. And the fact that it's misread, so, you know, the signs are misread, and that even when encountering the rifle and the situation, Buffy still thinks, oh, well, you're going to kill everybody. And like that wasn't on his mind. It's just like, you know, now she really can't read his mind. It like hammers home that, you know, she mm-hmm. doesn't have perfect information. So I think thematically it works. But also the character of Jonathan is so inept and so incapable of even doing something like killing himself. It shows how pathetic he is that he brought a rifle to do this.
I couldn't believe it, AJ. Like when I saw him holding a rifle, I was like, right. Of all the guns, like how are you even going to like, it's so long. Like how do you do that?
That's the point. He couldn't have done what he would have failed. He would have failed at this. And it
makes me even more sad for him.
Right. But that I love that. I love that, that he's such a sad sack of a character. It's great. Which is why Josh actually chose this storyline. He wanted it to be Jonathan, and the story of Jonathan, the reason he's even here, I mean, you've mentioned him, you know, you're referring to him as his other character name, but because that's what you recognize him for. He actually was in the pilot for this.
I love the side characters on this show. I feel like, and a lot of people have told us this, like going into Buffy, is they're really good with like continuity and sticking to the world that they've absolutely. Built. And these side characters, I feel like, are so good in the show because Jonathan, he is always, you can always count on him to be a little bit of like a sad sack or quietly saying something in the corner while no one pays attention. And same thing with, and I'm forgetting his name, AJ, you probably know it, the jock who we find out is gay and Xander has the conversation with.
Right.
I was so happy. He was like, oh, I came out to my parents, like all this. I was like, good for him. Like, I was happy that we got a check-in with that character.
They don't leave these things on the gray side. Like, I was supposed to say, Danny Strong, the actor who plays Jonathan, who has gone on to amazing things. You know, he did Empire. He's won Emmys for writing Empire, things like that. He auditioned to be Xander in the pilot and was like the second choice. Like he just lost out on the role. But they loved him. They thought he's great. So they gave him this like throwaway line in the pilot episode, you know, student number two, you know, unnamed character where he says something. And, you know, he loved being on set. And they said, all right, well, you're going to play this character. You know, eventually they gave him the name and like, he's always, you know, a line here, a line there. You've noticed him. I mean, obviously you recognize him from other shows, but like.
That's probably part of the reason why I've noticed him is just because I recognize him. But honestly.
There are so many extras. There's so many smaller characters who pop up again and again. It's the same background students. And mm-hmm. he just became this person who he was interested in how the show was run. He wanted a career in television. He wanted, you know, he was thinking about writing someday. He got to know the writers. And when Josh came up with this idea, he said, well, and it has to be Jonathan who has this part. And Jaina Svensson was like, and I have to write it because she had started to notice him and wanted to write for him. And she, as she told me when I interviewed her, she said, from this point on, like, I pitched like 4 or 5 Jonathan stories every season. Now, most, you know, it's like, you know, Josh would be like, no, this is not the Jonathan show. But, you know, it was that kind of thing. He was such he was so good. And he pulls off this dramatic scene, which you don't expect for him to pull the scene off at all. Mm-hmm. And it's such gravitas. Like, it's perfect. And you lock into characters like this. It's happy accidents where it's like, it's like David Lynch just passed in Twin Peaks. The whole course of Twin Peaks changed because a shot accidentally caught one of the grips in the mirror, and he became the killer of the show because David Lynch liked the way he looked creepy in the shot. You know, you get some happy accidents. Here you got a kid. He auditioned for one part. They said, well, we're not going to give it to you, but we're going to give you one line here. Oh, he read that. Great. Give him another line here, another line here. And suddenly he's having this really emotional, weighty scene in one of the most controversial episodes of the show that had to be, you know, postponed week after week after week. So it's just fascinating how that happened. But I love, that's another reason why I love this show, is like they weren't afraid to just throw the ordinary in there every so often. It's like, you know, because you're watching like, oh, what is it? Oh, it's a demon. Oh, bah, 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 bah. Oh, who is it? What is it? Is it just a troubled kid who's no one's listening to? And maybe if we just listen to them, that maybe if it doesn't save everybody, it might save the kid. And like, I think that's a great message.
Okay. So then I wonder if we could have all of that and then just it being like a misunderstanding. Like, I think it loses me a smidge with the lunch lady and the rat poison. Just like a smidge. Like, I'm like, I feel as though.
Is it too goofy? Is that like, is that?
No. Okay. Well, I think, like, for me, I'm like, okay, like, I'm into it. Like, we got our red herring with the newspaper kid. That's Freddy. Fine. Mm-hmm. Then we go to the clock tower and we see Jonathan and we have this, like, really big emotional thing. And the next thing I know, the lunch lady is, like, doing flips and saying, like, I'm poisoning you with rat poison. And I feel as though – and she's just – just a lunch lady. I'm not like lunch ladies are not just, but she's just a lunch lady. And she, I don't even know what her issue is. She just hates kids and she just wants to poison all the kids. And that's,
I think it's similar to that other teacher where it's like, oh, school would be so much better if there weren't kids here. I think they're just like frustrated with their job, but like,
then it's like, so it's like, because at first Buffy, when she was overhearing the like, I'm going to take over the school, everyone's gonna die, she's like, it was like, she was like, it is a demonic voice, like it is a demon. And it was like, it was almost like a, it was like a double trick, because like, oh no, it's not Freddy, it's Jonathan. But it's like, oh, but it's not Jonathan, it's lunch lady. And it's like, well, if it was the lunch lady was actually a demon, then it'd be like, okay, sure, whatever. But it was just a lunch lady that like probably doesn't get paid enough and like hates kids a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did get tricked, and in part because a lot of times I'll recognize these actors like in these one-off episodes. So Freddie, I recognized. And Sarah, I don't know if you also recognized him, but he was in the movie Drive Me Crazy that we covered, that had Sabrina the Teenage Witch, Melissa Joan Hart in it.
Sure.
And the guy from what's it called? Entourage. Anyway,
no, that was a fever dream, and you like love that movie, and I was like,
I do, I love that movie.
I was like, this is the worst movie that we've covered, probably.
But I recognized him, and so very quickly I was like, oh, it's him, it's him, I know him, it's him. This happened to me too in other episodes.
You have
like
to stop doing this.
I know.
I don't follow that path like you, and like I like get quote unquote duped, or like I read less into it. You have to stop playing edgic with Buffy the Vampire.
I do. I play edgic with Buffy. And then of course, when it didn't turn out to be Freddy, the reason he's avoiding Oz is because he wrote a negative review about Oz's band. But I will say that like, I find it interesting that the show did have two different students who both seem to be struggling, right? Like, we already talked about Jonathan's struggles, but Freddy certainly doesn't seem like a happy-go-lucky kind of guy either. Every single article he writes seems like extremely negative and hateful. And I just thought it was so interesting because I mean, you could see something similarly today, and not just because they're teenagers and they're hormonal and all of that, right? Like, school is was hard. Like, on a social level, it is difficult. So I liked the inclusion of Jonathan and Freddie. I think by the time we got to, like, the fact that it was actually the lunch lady, I was like, of course it is. And it was kind of silly. And I was fine with it, I guess. Like, it didn't, I don't know, it didn't bother me. I did get a crack out of Xander just flipping lunch tables, like, freaking out. I thought that was pretty
poisoned.
Funny.
It's poisoned. I mean, Xander called it in the beginning of the episode. He said, I bet it's that lunch lady because she, what was the meat, AJ? Like, I forget, like, it was like some sort of mystery meat. It also started with an M. It started with an M, and he was like, what? Like,
is that Mulligan?
Mulligan.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. Mulligan.
I was like, that's not even it. She was like, I bet it's her. So he calls in the beginning, and I think it's funny that, like, he was the one that discovered it was her because he was like, I want some Jell-O, which, by the way, same. I am probably the number one Jell-O advocate.
Nobody likes Jell-O on this podcast.
No one likes Jell-O like I like Jell-O. I guess Xander does. So, like, he goes and, like, mid chomping on the Jell-O, sees the lunch lady, like, putting in the biggest bunch of rat poison. And then it's up to Xander to save the day and say, everybody stop. Don't eat the whatever stew or whatever the heck we were eating. And then ultimately, like, Buffy comes in, does her kicky, kicky, punchy, punchy. And then we get, like, a really, really bad, stunt person for the lunch lady.
Intentionally bad.
You think it was intentional?
If you see Jaina Svensson has written the episode, it's a comedy episode.
Okay.
And the point is that these are a lot of the episodes where they lean in a little bit. They don't listen to the fans. They didn't go on the message boards, but they heard some of the criticisms. And one of the criticisms that they were hearing was like, oh, you know, it's so obvious when you use a stun double. So they kind of leaned into it.
She's holding a cleaver, for God's sake. You know, like, she's running at him, holding a cleaver like a cartoon character. And the rat poison, it's not like she's just, like, you know, back to the camera, like, pouring something in. A ginormous box of rat poison. And she's, like, tipping it in, like, like, she might as well have been twirling her mustache, you know, like. It definitely was over the top, and I appreciated that because we've talked about the camp on the show, and, like, we love the camp. And I think maybe when you just pair it with, like, the really intense sort of Jonathan scene, sometimes it's a little jarring to then, like, immediately cut to lunch lady with a cleaver. Like, you know, it's a lot.
You could also combine it with the fact that, you know, again, this is another case where when everybody's off dealing with, you know, Buffy, and, like, we got to fight the demon and get the heart, and here you have the Zeppo once again chasing after Jell-O and actually uncovering what's really going on. You know, it's
good
kind
for
of a thing. It's like, yeah, he sees things. You know, he sees the things. He sees.
Hey,
what's
listen,
going on.
A broken clock is right twice a day, right?
There you
Sometimes
go.
He's going to shout out and be right, and good on him. He was right this episode.
Even if he stumbled into it completely accidentally, because in Shaggy Scooby fashion, he was just looking for some snacks.
So, like, looking for some Jell-O. Let's talk a little bit.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let's talk a little bit about the Buffy side of things. She gets infected by this sort of this demon without a mouth because, like, it's radioactive blood basically touches her. And she knows she's going to get a quote unquote aspect of the demon. But they don't really know what it is. And of course, she's worried. Is it going to be a tail? Am I going to be slimy? Am I going to be scaly? Sarah, I will admit that the line from Willow about was it a boy demon sent me. I was so funny.
It was really funny. And I think, like, the fear of the unknown, like that is would probably drive me absolutely mad. Like I know once Giles said, like, you are going to get something of this demon, she wasn't even thinking of power. She was just thinking of like, what? And it's also just very like 16-year-old girl, right? Like, what kind of massive pimple do I have on my face? Like, am I going to be like deformed and ugly? Like, that would be the absolute worst, to come to school with horns. Like, that's so embarrassing. She wasn't even thinking that something kind of cool could happen. And then eventually she gets this like telepathy power, and it's really neat, and I thought it was really, really fun. And it just goes back to like I like this, and I think it works really, really well for me in particular as somebody who is not that drawn to supernatural or occult, because it brings in the teenage element. Like, when you're a teenager, you're like, what does everybody think of me? Like, am I cool? Like, am I a loser? Like, am I like a weirdo? Does anybody think like I think? And like, for Buffy to get that ability at first, she's like, this is really neat. Like, this is the best thing ever. I thought I was going to get a tail and some horns, or maybe like a man penis. I don't know. But like, in reality, I got this special power. I can hear what everybody thinks. This guy thought my butt was good. Like, what a win, right? And then it turns into like, and maybe one of you, I feel as though I've seen this like too many voices inside my head thing from like X-Men or something, or some other something or other. Like,
I think it's a common thing in any sort of mind reading story line, where it's eventually going to be overwhelming, especially if you don't have any control over like whose minds you're hearing from. AJ, I think you are a little bit more well versed in that sort of. Can you recall any specific storylines?
I can't recall a specific one, and I'm not a Marvel person, so I'm sure it exists out there. Absolutely, It is, though, a very tropey kind of thing for, I've got the power, but I can't control the power. And therefore, it goes spiraling out of my control. And so, that's common. I mean, heck, that's was the entire basis of the Greatest American Hero TV show. It's like, I've got the super suit, but I don't know how to use it.
It reminds me of something so particular, and I'm just like trying to rack my brain on where I've seen this before, of just like the headache and like the voices and like trying to like block it out. The whole like listening in and being like, no, like, please do not listen to my thoughts feels very familiar too. A little like Harry Potter, Snape, like in their secret little lessons type of thing. Yeah. Remember that moment?
Yeah. And it's, I do love the, when they lean into the high school of it all, and the first thing she does with it is like answer questions in class by like cheating off of the girl next to her and reading her mind and like the teacher's mind, right? It all felt very true. Like, that is probably what a high schooler would do if they were able to read minds. And I thought it was interesting. I really thought we would spend a longer time with Buffy not telling the Scoobies about this power. Like, AJ, I really thought she was going to get more secrets out of all of them before she divulged that she could read their minds.
Yeah, although I think part of it is also like she was really so relieved that it wasn't a tale or something, that, she was just happy to share. She'd already, shared with Giles that she was going to get the aspect of the demon, and she was so happy to show it off, I think. So I think there was that aspect of it going on there. Sarah, maybe you're thinking of 11 in Stranger Things.
That could be it.
That could definitely be it.
I'm thinking about a little more. She's kind of got that ability to, like, go into people's thoughts and, like, oh, no, it's too much. I gotta get out.
Yes, okay. I definitely, that sounds very familiar.
But what is Buffy's focus right now, especially after last episode, even though we know it's not actually the last episode when this aired, but the last episode was like, was Angel really into Faith?
This is okay. Can I ask about this? Because this felt like not a bridge too far. And again, I have to keep telling myself these are high schoolers, whatever. But like, Buffy, come on. Like, do you really think Angel is into Faith, who is evil now? Like, no. And he's not Angelus. Like, I don't know. It felt like a little bit too much for me.
I think maybe, you know, I will say maybe in the course of the whole season, you know, for her to go that she's kind of like a pendulum, like, I trust him implicitly. Oh, maybe I don't trust him. Oh, he loves me. No, he doesn't. Yeah, I get that it's kind of repetitive, but, you know, it's a 23 episode season orders kind of thing. Yeah, you sometimes have to repeat yourself. But I do like the fact that, like, it was front of mind for her last mm-hmm. episode before they hatched their plan. You know, just when she saw Faith over there, she's like, oh, are they together? And then, you know, obviously Angel comes to her and they hatch their little plan. So she should be relieved. But then again, she's an insecure high school student. So,
yeah,
you know, hey, I've got this power. I'm not going to tell him about it. I'm just going to go over there and I'll read his mind and all my worries will be gone. And I love the fact, the choice that, like, it's not that she doesn't do it. It's not that she gets confirmation. No, it's going to just make her even more flustered that he's just like, you know, your mind tricks don't work on me.
I thought that was really cool too, in the setup where she was looking in the mirror and he didn't see his reflection, because of course he's a vampire and that carries through in the vampire lore of Buffy. And she turns around, she sees him, she's like, ooh, ah, okay. And then it carries on later in the reading the mind thing. And he's like, it's just like the mirror. Like, you know, you're not going to be able to do it, which I feel as though is really funny. I feel like this happened in Twilight as well.
It happened in True Blood as well. That's actually like a huge plot point. The main character can read minds, and the reason she likes vampires and wants to be around them is because it's quiet, because she can't read their minds.
Can't read their minds. And I'm pretty sure that what I am thinking of in terms of like what I was talking about earlier is Jean Grey from X-Men.
Ah, that would make sense.
She has telepathic headaches. So I think that is where I was reaching from, because, you know, I'm such a Marvel X-Men girl.
Such a Marvel stan over there.
So, yeah, I'm so into comic books. Anyway, yeah, I really like it. I mean, it was, I think that I really like the scene as well where she was, because Buffy's not good at school and everybody knows that. And she knows that herself. She gets a little self-conscious about her intelligence at times, especially when you have Willow going into every single Ivy League school there ever was. The fact that she was able to answer those questions, and like the teacher was like, oh, Buffy, you're so like insightful, like that was very astute of you. I would be like, if I ever got those compliments from a teacher in school, I'd be like, I am that bitch, everybody. Look at me. I am astute. Did you hear that? I am astute. I'd be like quoting that all damn day. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was this one time where in college where a professor was asking us questions and I was like Googling the answers and like telling him them back. And then I like told him like a little like backstory, and he called me a historian, and I felt like the smartest bee ever, but like I was cheating, of course. But I was like, did you hear that, everybody? I'm a historian. It's so
incredible. I did love the one-off character that she cheats off of. Like she reads her mind. And then later when Buffy does like the triple backflip onto the roof, she's like, I could have done that. I want her back, because I appreciated how pissed off she was getting that Buffy was like answering the questions. It was incredible. It was perfect. Now I have a question, because we're on the topic of the whole mind reading ability. What, I mean, AJ, if you got this power for like a day, like whose mind would you read? Like, where would you go? What would you do?
I mean, that's good. That's kind of the double-edged sword, right? I mean, you want to know what do your friends really think about you? What does your family really think about you? You're going to find out the answers. You might not want to know. Sometimes ignorance is bliss, and there's a good reason why you wouldn't have it. Yeah. I mean, I'd want my life to remain as similar as possible with my friends intact and everything. I'm going to go and get the combinations to safes from people. Yeah. I'm going to get smart the ATM codes from people, stuff like that, where it's like, oh, maybe I can get a little cash out of the situation, but not ruin my relationships with people who I love dearly, who I might not love as dearly if I knew what they were really thinking about.
What about you, Sarah? What would you do?
Yeah, I started thinking of the same along the same path as AJ. Like, how can I make bank out of this? Because I don't, number one, I would have to go so far to find people that I actually know around here, since I'm like pretty new to the city. I don't care what my random Indianapolis friends that I'm still developing friendships with think about me. It's like, if you don't, but, and I don't think I want to know what my friends think about me either. Like, I don't want it to ruin anything. Mm-hmm. Like, I kind of think that it would be more interesting when I was younger than I am now, but I don't know.
Yeah. I think you're right. Like, I don't think I would want, there's certain people, like, I don't want to know like their real thoughts, but maybe I would like probe for questions I never got answers to. And like, that way I could just you know what I mean? But beyond that, I do think the move is like getting some money out of the deal, because it's not going to last very long. You know, if we're doing it in this temporary fashion, like Buffy, and I wouldn't go to someplace crowded, because that seems like a true nightmare. I already can't focus. I can't imagine having everyone's thoughts swirling around in my brain constantly. But yeah, it also think amplified the scariness, because there's no longer that boundary between Buffy and Giles where he is able to kind of say everything's going to be okay and be lying, because she can now hear exactly what he's thinking. And what he's thinking is she's going to lose her mind if we don't figure out a solution, because all of the thoughts will just swirl and swirl and swirl until her head just, I don't know, implodes. So that was interesting. AJ, I don't know if I knew at the time, I really realized the ramifications at the time of like Buffy ends up in almost like a comatose state as a result of hearing everything.
Yeah, it's, you know, the hydrant is open and it's just spilling the water out onto the street, and it's not going to stop until you turn off the water supply. It's scary. And it's kind of what Buffy does best, is it juxtaposes some really funny moments with some serious moments. And it's coming from the same source there. I mean, we get confirmation from when she's able to just focus on one person, when Joyce comes into the room.
This was the best. This was the best moment of the whole episode. And I was like, her yelling twice? Just it sent me. I couldn't.
Great. And this came about, Jada Spencer had written Band Candy, and she thought it was very obvious that they had done it. She thought she didn't need to explain it, but she had so many people come up to her. Did they really do it? Did they really do it? Did they really do it? And she thought, well, yes, but since it was unclear, apparently, I'm just going to spell it out. And she did it in such a fun way for this, so that not only do we get the Joyce revelation, which causes her, I'm going back downstairs, la la la, to, you know, at the button at the end of the episode where you know, Giles walked into a tree, which was so a completely good improvised thing that Anthony Stewart had did. It was not in the script. So
so funny.
Incredible.
Great button. But yeah, it's this funny thing, and she's finding out things she doesn't want to know. And then, but that same thing that was just so humorous just develops and goes further and further and further. And she opens the window and she hears everybody in the town's problems. And yes, she's the Slayer. She's supposed to fix everybody's problems, but one at a time, please.
Yeah. The Joyce revelation was definitely my favorite thing that Buffy overheard. I think Oz is probably my second favorite. Willow, I think, was spot on for the character, and her just being like worried, right? Just worried constantly, like, oh, Buffy doesn't need me anymore. Oh, now she's going to know Oz better than I do, right? Like, just constant worries. Xander, of course, just thinking of sex.
And perfect reassurance. It's the reassurance that Willow gets from Oz that Buffy doesn't get from Angel, because Willow gets so nervous she leaves the room, and Oz, I'm going to go follow the redhead. We know immediately that Oz loves her. Like, Oz is with her, and Buffy doesn't get that. Yeah, but Angel's not going with me. Angel's still going to go with Faith? Like, like, yeah. So, you know, she doesn't get that reassurance, but she sees the relationship that she really wants is that relationship. So it's kind of like thrust in her face that way. And that's not something she needs to read minds. And of course, Cordelia, who is just, what you see is what you get with Cordelia. And
I loved so that.
Proven by everything she thinks is exactly the next word.
Yeah, what did she say? I want to leave. And then she's like, can I go now? Immediately after she thinks that. Sarah, I have a question for, I have two questions for you because as far as predictions go, because we got, because we're hearing the inner thoughts of a lot of our characters this episode, we focus a lot on Xander's jealousy of Cordelia and Wesley possibly being a thing, right? My Cordy is what he says. Do you think there's anything here, or are we like are we completely done with Zordy and moving on to what, Wardy?
I think that Cordelia is very over Xander. Like, I think that she's never going to put herself in a position to be humiliated by that mid-man ever again. Mm-hmm. So I mean, like, Xander can slobber all over Cordelia that he wants, but she's never going to give him the time of day ever again. And why should she, right? Like, he literally cheated on her. She opened up her heart to him. She loved him. She really was were developing feelings for him, and he just like humiliated her. So like, I just can't see her giving him the time of day. And I think that she's ready for like maybe not a Wesley, but like she's ready for like college boys. Like, Cordelia is a mature woman. I can totally see her be like, ugh, like, I'm done with high school boys. Like, they are immature. They are beneath me. I want like a mature man. And I can see her being in that sort of a mood. I don't know if that's Wesley, but Wesley certainly is interested in Cordelia. And so I don't know exactly where this is going. I know everybody tells me that the age difference is weird and gross. I see it. I get it. It's just like very hard when the actress and the actor visibly look very similar. And I understand that like power dynamics, blah, 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 blah. I just don't think that it's really an issue at this moment. And I like don't really get it. Like, because, okay, like, do we have any proof that Wesley is 26 years old to Cordelia's 18? Like, is there,
we don't know their ages.
They well, here's the thing. I was listening to you when Hannah was on and you were talking about this. I know your debate back and forth on this topic. So they kind of start addressing it here. Like, they're not oblivious to this. You know, they mention the fact, well, you know, they make Cordelia make the move. Cordelia is the one who asks him out on the date. That kind of takes away the power dynamic. He's not her teacher. He doesn't work for the school. So there really isn't that power dynamic there. The only thing that could possibly be is the huge age difference, just from a legal standpoint. But if she's close enough to 18, you know,
she is 18. Like,
she's making the move. She's clearly the initiator. I think that kind of alleviates a lot of the problems. Look, you have a lot of female writers in that writer's room. And I know Joss Whedon does not have the greatest reputation, and deservedly so, for a lot of his shenanigans. But if there was really a problem with it, it would not have gotten out of that writer's room.
I think that I'll feel better about it. Like, if there is going to eventually be a Cordy Wesley courtship, I think I would feel more comfortable with it, like, post high school. I think that's where I get like so skeeved out, is the fact that she is still in high school. Like,
I don't get it. Feels worse. You literally dated somebody when you were in high school with somebody who is out of high school.
He was in college, so I feel like we don't know what's going on with Wesley. That's the problem.
We don't know how old Wesley is. If you told me that Wesley was 22 or 23 years old, I don't know, like, maybe that's,
I would not believe that. This man acts like he's like 60 years old.
Again, We're on a show where the main character is dating someone who's hundreds of years older than her.
And that's, yeah, that's the biggest problem, right? And he says, I've only been in one love one time. I forgot to mention this earlier when we were talking about Angel and Buffy. He says, I've only been in love one time in my 200 plus years. And I was like, wow, shots fired at Drew Lulu. Well, like, that is rude.
I mean, that was obvious. Like, he was not in love with Drew. He was obsessed with torturing her. Like, that's, like, not... Like, he was not in love with her. Spike is in love with Drew, like, yeah. Undoubtedly so. I do want to talk about that, because, like, it was like very funny and just like so cheesy and like
I love you. It's like so melodramatic. Like, I okay.
Can just somebody please just like tell me the age difference between the actors? Like, please.
Between the actors?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I would assume Charisma Carpenter is in her late 20s. That's usually how things go on these sorts of high school shows, but I'm not Googling anything. I've been instructed never to Google about Buffy.
No, you guys should not Google at all, but I can.
AJ will let us know.
Or like, okay, or just tell me like how old Wesley is supposed to be. Because if this man is like supposed to be 23 years old, then I don't want to talk about this anymore. It's fine.
So
the problem is that we don't know enough about the Watchers count, the Watchers themselves either, because I have no idea like how much time do they need to be trained? Like, when are they inducted into the Watchers? Like, Giles very obviously is much older than Wesley. And based on what we understand so far, it seems like Buffy is his first assignment, is his first slayer. So, like, what is the process for becoming a Watcher? Like, is it just nepotism? Like, we don't know, which makes it even harder to peg down ages on these people. You know?
Alexis is 4 years older than Charisma.
4 years. I'm done. Like, the conversation is over.
We don't have to talk about it anymore.
He's 8 years older than Allison, so who he marries in real life. So
Oh yeah. In real life. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just saying that, like, if you wanted me to have this problem, then
I didn't. I was just asking. I knew we know where we both stand on this topic. So I wasn't asking to change your mind. I was asking because I was curious to know if you thought that there would be a future Zordy, because in past shows we've covered sometimes, and Buffy is very different, so I'm not trying to say it will do the same things as like your Dawson's Creeks and your Felicities, right? Sometimes they set the stuff up early where it's like a throwaway comment, and then episodes later these characters are together, which brings me to another question I had, and this one I feel pretty strongly that I know the answer to, but I found it really interesting that, because we have Percy. Percy is back. Percy is the character that Willow is tutoring. I know. I knew I would have to explain that because it's like, I don't know how I remember his name. She is tutoring Percy. Percy is on the basketball team. He's like this big basketball star. Now Willow is into basketball, right? Like, she's like attending games. I view it as kind of a way to show that there are social activities that Buffy is unable to attend due to her Slayer responsibilities. So especially because Willow says, Oz is going, Xander, everyone's going. This isn't Willow is the only one going to Percy's basketball game to support him. I don't think there's anything here, but Sarah, do you think there's any possibility of any sort of Willow and Percy matchup?
Poor Oz, right? Like, I mean,
yeah, seriously.
I mean, I felt like there was some like weird stuff going on. I also, in this episode with like Willow and Percy and like the interest, but I'm kind of chalking this up to Willow's after the other episode where something happened and she's less of a wimp. I totally forget at this very second what that was, but we said that there was going to be
Doppelgangland for one.
Right. Yeah. That there was going to be like a that was meant to be a like pivotal moment for Willow, where she's going to another moment where she's going to come into her own and like not take shit. And I think that this is like a product of that. Like, you know, she's getting more respect from other people within the school, and like her social capital is like getting higher. Also, they're seniors. And like, I don't know about you, but when I became a senior, especially by the second half of senior year, it seemed as though like all those like really like things that seemed important about like popularity and like social like hierarchy seemed to dissipate, because by then nobody gave a shit anymore and people were just like getting along because like we were just like over it. So I kind of feel like that could be coming into play as well. I don't know if either of you experienced that phenomenon when you were a senior in high school, but I definitely remember like it wasn't the same as it was earlier in high school.
I would say, you know, when you're a senior in high school and once the college acceptances start coming in, especially, and the finality of it all kind of hits everybody all at the same time, it's like, we're not going to be together after this. This is coming to an end. And I think, you know, for some people, that's a very scary time, absolutely. But it's also, it's a bittersweet time where it's just like, you know, even your best friends you might not stay in touch with. And certainly things are going to change. You recognize it. And so a lot of the, you know, high school is the reason the show works is because to a high schooler, everything is the end of the world. And so, you know, when you have these supernatural things that are the end of the world, you go, oh, yeah, maybe high school isn't so bad. You'll get over this. But yeah, everyone does kind of get into that way. What I found even more interesting in retrospect, having been to my 25th and 30th and 35th high school reunions, is that when we do get back together for the reunions, it takes all of about 25 seconds for us all to fall back right into the exact same roles we had back in high school. It's uncanny that I would be sitting there with my high school group and, you know, doesn't matter what careers we've gone on to, what kind of successes we have. It's like the quiet guy's still the quiet guy. The funny guy's still the funny guy. The bully is still kind of a bully. Like you just fall back into those roles so easily. So I do think that this is the one time in a high school that everyone is kind of inoculated. Like even the jocks, like he knows my name.
Like, yeah. Yeah. By the time that like yearbooks came around, like I was like getting my year, like signing my yearbook and getting like signing other people's yearbooks, that like I was like almost like too nervous to even like be around because I was worried that they're going to make fun of me. Like somehow it just like stops mattering, and like that is that time. I think it's also like Willow, I don't know, like she's enjoying getting invited to these things. Like she never used to be invited to these things or included, and people didn't really talk to her, and it must be really nice for her to be not invisible anymore. Like Jonathan literally said that earlier, like he was invisible. And also like I felt like that conversation was so interesting because Buffy said something that I think is so true, especially as a high schooler, but also in like your 20s, is that everybody is so wrapped up in their own bullshit that they are not actively thinking about you. And it sounded mean, like it sounded so cruel, but in a way of like, we're all wrapped up in our own stuff. Like we're not like thinking or like making fun or like, you know, putting all that focus on you. Yeah. And like, you feel isolated, but that's because everybody's also in their own head.
Yeah, that's always a common thing of like, you're thinking of yourself more than anyone else ever is, in a way that should be comforting because no one's paying attention. Like no one cares. It's fine. You know? Yeah. I just wanted to ask because I feel like having watched so many teen dramas, again, Buffy is very different, I would say, than like your average like Dawson's Creek, Felicity sort of a teen drama. I'm so used to them setting up these sort of plot lines, these romance plot lines where it's seeded usually a few episodes before anything actually happens. I'm not nervous for like the whys of it all. I agree with you, Sarah. I think it's a combination of we're using this as a way to show that Buffy isn't allowed to do social things because she's a Slayer. And also, it seems like Willow's actually like having a good time now, which is nice. Like, I feel like she put everything into being a member of the Scoobies and also like being the best at school. And it's nice that she has the ability to like kind of step back a little bit and like enjoy some things about school that I think she probably wasn't previously. So yeah, it was just like an interesting aspect of the episode.
Aspect of the demon.
Yeah, aspect of the demon, yeah. But let's talk about like Giles, and we have a little mention of the mayor and his ascension on graduation day and all of that. Giles and Wesley seem like they're still actively trying to figure it out, but like haven't really made much progress. In fact, Wesley makes like a really snide comment to Giles about like how he was updating them, and he's like, oh, what'd you do for the other 50 seconds of the minute? Like, there's nothing to update you on because we haven't found anything. Yeah, I don't know that there's much more, as we kind of talked about already. Like, there's no mayor, there's no Faith this episode. Kind of stinks, but understandable.
This was supposed to be the kind of, you know, step away for a minute, catch your breath, and then the last four episodes of the season. They always do this. Episode 17, 18 are always, there's always a funny episode where it's just like, all right, take a breath, everybody, put off the gas,
yeah,
brace yourselves, because it's coming. You know, there's, I'm not going to spoil you, and I would certainly discuss this, certain parts of this, what you just said all about Willow and everything, differently if I didn't want to keep you spoiler free and everything. But there are like two or three things in this episode which are just in hindsight, chef's kiss as to what is going to come. So I will just say that. Also, to your point of the seeds that are planted, I think what's great about what the show decides to do in episode one of season four is they give you all the breadcrumbs right in episode one. Like, they don't make a secret of it. They show you so much in episode one of season four where it's like, and this is everything you need to know for the season. You're just not going to understand it now because it's episode one, but we're going to throw it all at you so you can see it and get your minds working. So I think the show enjoyed doing that and planting seeds along the way. And mm-hmm. next year, they're just going to just say, the heck with it. Here's the season. Figure it out. So I think they enjoy the little cat and mouse that they play with the audience. And I love hearing mm-hmm. you guys try to piece it all together. I will say there is such a it was disappointing that I didn't get to see this episode in run, knowing in two episodes time how much better the scene, the final scenes are, having seen this episode. And so you guys, I really can't wait for you to get to episode 20, because I want to see
barreling to the end,
having seen this where you wouldn't have otherwise, because I think it's going to hit a lot different in a good way.
Mm-hmm. So luckily Buffy does get cured. Angel is able to go obtain the heart of the other demon and get some kind of radioactive liquid that Buffy has to swallow, and then she's okay. Everything's fine.
And again, the comedy of it is like, you know, well, how much does she have to take? I don't know. She ends up taking like one little sip, one little bite.
Yeah, just dump her down her throat. It's fine. But so then if she took it, if like she was cured and then she pours more of the radioactive goop on her, then is she uncured? Like, can we go like back and forth with
you
this?
Just gotta rub some on as lotion, then later in the day guzzle some. Like, she had the rest of that container of it.
That seems like some good goop to have.
That's trip serum, baby.
Yeah, some good goop on the side.
Yeah, none of that sea gook. We got some mind gook. That's helpful gook. Yeah, so everything is fine. She's able to kind of come back in and, you know, attempt to save the day in a way that turns out to be not the actual way to save the day. Xander is the one. Buffy comes in last minute and actually helps out significantly. Yeah,
totally.
But I mean, that's the episode. I really love the idea of Buffy getting like the ability to read people's minds. I almost wish we got a little bit more juicy gossip, but like the Joyce thing was so good that I really shouldn't complain. I just assumed we would get more because we're hanging out with high school students who can now read people's minds. Like, come on now, you know?
Yeah, but you know, high school students don't really have any much of interesting to say. Like, the most interesting people were the adults.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I really loved Giles too. Like, when she read his mind about like, oh, I should have known. That's why they didn't have mouths. And then he says the same thing he's thinking.
Yeah, I know. You just told me in your head.
Yeah.
So good.
Anything else, AJ, that we missed from this episode of Buffy before we get into some feedback?
I think you totally you hit the major points there. And like I said, I totally enjoy listening to you guys' takes on things, and it's killing me. It's killing me not being able to just come out of, like,
we keep hearing that. Yeah. It's like there's so much that we don't know.
I am fully respectful of the no spoilers, but it is hard.
Well, let's get into some feedback here. We do have some older feedback from David that he sent in after Doppelganger Land and Enemies. So we're like one episode late here with this one. But he wanted to talk about the Faith and Buffy sexual tension that we had mentioned on the podcast. And he said, watching this in real time in the earliest days of online fandom, this was definitely a discussion up to a point, but people in general and the show in particular had a much less nuanced view of sexuality than they do in 2025. Media didn't really present the characters as bisexual. They're either gay or straight. So while we all saw the tension between them, it was seen at best as one-sided from Faith and not a relationship that had serious shipping presence in the fandom. Makes total sense. Nowadays, though, my God, there'd be Buffy fans everywhere.
I mean,
there still are.
They were still, I just think it wasn't necessarily, you didn't have the online community, ability.
The Tumblr girlies would go wild.
Yeah, it was there. It was absolutely there. Just like I said, you should know about it because you couldn't just, live tweet it.
Yeah. David also mentioned Faith staking Mr. Trick and then showing up to ask the mayor for his job at the end of this episode was a great 1-2 punch that shocked the system back in the day. It threw the fandom for a serious loop. Trick was supposed to be a bigger deal than he ended up being. He and Buffy never got to develop the same animosity that she and Spike had. I know there was some kind of drama behind the scenes that I've never looked into that led to him leaving sooner than was originally planned. But the pivot leading to Faith going to the dark side is a net win because evil Faith is fantastic. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
My only recollection was that the actor who played Trick actually had auditioned for Spike, and they loved him, and they just wrote this other character for him to get him on the show. So I don't know if anything ending badly or anything like that. But, actors do leave to take roles somewhere else. Maybe I don't remember if it was anything more than that.
Yeah. I like David's thought here, too. I always feel like I would have liked to see a bit more of Faith pretending to be good while working for the mayor before it gets revealed here in Enemies, like an episode where Faith being a double agent is more plot relevant. Having said that, I think Enemies makes up for it for not ever giving us that by giving us more Angel and Faith interaction, especially Faith and the fake Angelus, and then having Faith and Buffy fight to a draw with knives at each other's throats. And this is where he has a question, which I think is fascinating. Something to discuss on the podcast. Do y'all think that Angel would have actually slept with Faith if he had to remain undercover longer? I feel like he wouldn't have gone that far.
Probably not.
That seems like a lot for Angel to do.
I don't know. I don't think so. Like, I think that he's he says in this episode that like Buffy's literally the only person that he's ever loved in his life. Like, I don't think that Angel himself would sacrifice that. Like, I think that he would find a way to like wiggle himself out of that one. Probably. I wanted to say that I understand like wanting to have like the double agent aspect of it, but also I really, really love that Giles was able to determine that Faith was lying within an instant, especially over Wesley, who wasn't able to pick that up. And that just like makes the difference between like an experienced watcher and a not experienced watcher, or somebody who gets to know their slayers on a more like, I mean, there's definitely times where like Giles probably like gets too close to them, but I think that that gives like an advantage in that moment because like, he was able to pick up in an instant that she wasn't being genuine about killing the mayor's assistant or the deputy mayor. We put no respect on that man's name. None at all.
He's dead. Who cares now?
But yeah, like I like the fact that like he's able to like pick up on the bullshit. It just makes Giles feel like he's like on a different level. And I think it's that like life experience of not only being the Ripper himself, that he has the ability to like, you know, like a bullshitter knows a bullshitter, right? Like, you know, he's able, he has that like advantage, especially like over Wesley, who's probably never done like a bad thing in his life. Maybe he's like Ripper Jr. I don't know. We'll see. But I just think that having Giles call bluff makes it like kind of worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. We also got an email from Rowan. I know the running joke on the podcast is fucking someone's soul away. Yeah. But it's also very clearly not what happened with Buffy. Angel did not lose his soul the moment of orgasm. He lost it during the afterglow, feeling truly happy that someone as wonderful as Buffy deemed him worthy of her. So no, just fucking or having an orgasm isn't enough to de-soul Angel. It has to be something more and deeper than that. I know that.
Okay. Like, I think it's like, it's not the release. It's the person that you're with. Like, it's
exactly
intellectual, emotional, and physical connection.
Yeah. Him fucking Faith wouldn't bring his soul back because he doesn't care about her.
Bliss, but not just like a release of satisfaction. Like, that is the difference of like,
yeah.
It's like, making love versus
no.
Yes, Jessica. Oh! Yes, Jessica. They made love.
I knew it. I could see that. I could see that statement coming from out of your mouth from you a mile
it.
Away.
You hate it because you hate.
Yeah, I
love.
Hate it. I hate you making hate love. Making it's like the making love.
It also shows the dichotomy between the two characters because Faith is arrogant enough to think that I can get his soul. Whereas
yeah.
Buffy
yeah.
would never think that she was good enough or deserving yeah. enough. For him to love her that way. So it's a perfect, again, juxtaposition of the two characters.
Yeah. Rowan continues, I've been a Buffy fan almost from the beginning, around the time season 3 was first airing, and I finally got over myself and stopped saying Buffy was just Dawson's Creek with vampires. At one time, I owned the entire series on VHS. It was one of the first shows I ever binge watched and the first one that I pirated. Naughty. When I was in the UK and couldn't bear to wait 6 weeks for season 6 to premiere over there. So I found a pixelated postage stamp sized download to watch. I'm loving your takes on the show. Keep up the great work. That is hilarious. Look at you committed, Rowan. Look at you. That is so funny. We also got an email from Justin. I think this is so fascinating. Before I get into the coverage of Earshot, let me just say that I actually disagree with your thoughts about the Mayor-Faith relationship. I think the mayor genuinely does care for her, but because he hasn't had any kids of his own, he probably doesn't understand how to be fully there for her, like someone like her, be there for someone like her. Hence, smile, hair stuff, all those comments he makes. I don't know. That's interesting.
Well, it's kind of like, oh, like I'm watching like a 50s sitcom of like what a father is like. And like he sees that and he's like, oh, that's what like a good father is like. You know, I can't like leave it to Beaver or like whatever. Like, oh, that's like a perfect family. So he like replicates that. And like maybe he thinks that it's like genuine, but like without being a father or a mother, like how can you really know what that is and like what that love is? Besides it being earned, like Giles and Buffy, because they've spent a lot of time together.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think he's going through the motions of what he thinks. It's a relationship he wants. It's a relationship he desires. He's never had, and this must be how to do it. And I think he just expects that it'll work because of, well, I'm impervious to everything, including rejection, you know, in his mind. So I think you nailed it though. It's definitely, it's a mirror as to the good old days.
You know, he should have taken some lessons from Daddy Vamps on how to be a proper father figure, but that's fine. That's fine. Justin continues, now on to Earshot. This is an episode that makes me feel a variety of emotions. It makes me laugh at some of the thoughts they're having, annoyed at how Buffy feels the need to have to test Angel. Why do women feel the need to test who they're with? Just be upfront. I wouldn't even say women. I would just say teenagers. I feel like that comes with like emotional maturity is not questioning everything your partner is saying, and trust. That whole Jonathan subplot hits far differently and harder having gone through, and Justin lists a couple things he's gone through in his personal life that I don't want to necessarily read on the podcast, but I can't wait for you guys to see what's come still to come in the next few episodes. I can imagine this episode being extremely difficult for anyone who's dealt with any sort of proximity, you know, to anything going on with the school shooting aspect, the self-harm aspect. Like there's a lot, the mental health aspect, which I will say, I don't know that we necessarily mentioned it. Surprisingly decent handling of mental health in a 90s show. I think that is generally not the case in our experience, Sarah, is like most shows don't handle mental health stuff very
and
well.
I'll tell you why, because a woman wrote the episode.
Yes, I mean, where's the lie though? Yeah, I see that being true. We also got an email from Cheryl. So Cheryl had said, I don't know that the show holds up badly when it comes to Jonathan. We think he's a school shooter for a minute, but it turns out the only person he wants to kill is himself. I don't know what you remember about Columbine and the aftermath, but there was a lot of chatter about how bullied kids snap and start shooting, etc. And Jonathan sort of fits that stereotype. But with time and more information, it seems more like the opposite. Shooters are more likely to be the bullies in the first place. And also a lot of them, even at high school ages, have histories of misogyny, violence towards women and girls. Seems like paying attention to that early on might stop some of these events before they happen. I think making Jonathan a school shooter would have been easy and the way a lot of shows in that era would have played it. But I think they made a better, more accurate choice here. A kid like Jonathan would be more likely to be a danger to himself than a target and a target for bullies who could turn out to be the real shooters, as well as for various types of manipulation. We'll see where this fits into his character going forward, I guess. Yeah, that Cheryl, that is like a really astute point. Like it would have been so easy to make Jonathan just a school shooter, and I'm like, I'm really pleased. While that wasn't my favorite aspect of the episode, AJ, I feel like that's true. Like it would have been easy to do that, and I'm happy they didn't.
Yeah, oh absolutely. I think again, it one of the things that's great about this episode is that you do see, I mean, who's the one who saves the day, you know, who's the one who talks him down. It's a fellow student. And you hear the thoughts of the teachers. The teachers are supposed to be the grown-ups, the ones who've been through this and who should be the ones who are talking to them and saying, hey, it gets better. And all their thoughts are either, I wish all the students would go away, I want to kill the students, or, well, Buffy did a great job because she thinks exactly like I do. They're also full of themselves or oblivious to the needs of the students. And isn't that an indictment on some of the educational system that we have as well? If you get the right teachers, great. But unfortunately, you don't always have the right teachers in the right place or the willingness to be able to read the students' minds, not because of any supernatural power, but because they've been there. I think, yeah, it's a little depth to the story I hadn't thought of before.
Mm-hmm. Also, Cheryl had a question. I don't know what this is in reference to, if it comes up in the episode. I looked in the transcript. I didn't see it. I looked up what a Stevedore is, Stevedore, but I don't understand how it applies to sex. Any ideas? Is this one of those things that means something to people other than its literal meaning that people just kind of know? It's not one that I recognize. I assume the writers were possibly older than me. I don't know anything about this term.
It's just the guy who works on the docks, loading and unloading the ships, you know.
Oh, that's just who it is. Okay, burly that's man.
A burly man.
Oh, okay. Or, so Sarah, it's kind of like your lumberjack guy, but covered in sea gook.
But also, you keep saying, what does Angel do? He just hangs out at the dock. Maybe he's a stevedore.
He's a stevedore. Moody, broody Angel.
You know, I do love a big, burly man that does labor. So if that is... that
labors.
Yeah, that, if that's a person that has to do with sex, sign me up. Is what I've got to say about that.
We also got an email from Linda. Hey, Jess and Sarah, it's been a minute. First off, congrats, Mrs. Humphrey. I'm so very excited for you and Adam to start this amazing new chapter together. I'm wishing you a lifetime together filled with happiness, laughter, and amazing blessings.
Thank you, Linda. You've been with us on the pod for such a long time, and you've been through so much with us, and it is amazing. Very happy. First month of marriage has been good. No issues as of yet.
Incredible. Linda continues, Earshot is one of my favorite episodes of the entire series. Buffy is known to get a bit speechy, and the speech in the clock tower with Jonathan is my favorite Buffy speech of the series. I love how this episode showcases that everyone is fighting their own battles every day. We have a tendency sometimes, especially as teenagers, to get stuck in our own heads about our problems and feel hurt or angry that nobody cares or notices our pain. The truth is, everyone, no matter how it appears on the outside, is doing their best to deal with their own fears and struggles. Wow, yeah. That really well put, Linda.
Yeah, Linda had such interesting and insightful things to say around mental health when we were talking about Dawson's Creek in relation to Andy. And those were some like really important conversations, and having Linda's perspective during that time was like very valuable. And super so helpful. I can totally understand, Linda, how this would, how you would appreciate this, because it's very much in the same vein of like how mental health is important and how like we see each other in the world.
Mm-hmm. Also, I love this next message from Linda. Being a self-proclaimed Levinson's lassie, I love getting to see more Jonathan in this episode. So I'm assuming his last name is Levinson. I don't think I knew that. In this episode, he's one of my favorite Buffy characters. He's definitely the one I relate to the most. You all think I'm a short idiot. My 4'10 self felt that in my bones. Out of all the Buffyverse cast members, I've met Danny Strong, and he's the only one that, out of all the Buffyverse characters, cast members I've met, Danny Strong is the only one that caused me to lose my ability to speak. That is fascinating. Also, side note, Buffy dropping her tray in the cafeteria sends me back to my senior year of high school when I tripped in the cafeteria, my lunch tray went flying, my Snapple bottle smashed on the ground, which back in the day, those were glass, food everywhere, and everyone started clapping. So apparently this is a thing that happens in real life too.
Okay, never mind. Even seniors are assholes.
This definitely happens. Like,
embarrassing. Don't
this
clap.
This happens in like restaurants and everything, right? Like, if someone drops something, everyone claps. I feel like that's a thing.
It certainly was a thing in school. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's humiliating. I would die. Mm-hmm.
But again, when it happens in school, it's immediately forgotten by 95% of the people in that room, except for the person who did it. So.
Oh yeah, I still remember the humiliation I felt in college when I dropped my taco salad, and every single time I passed that spot, I just thought of my taco salad there. It was horrible. I avoided that spot for a really long time.
Oh my God.
I did.
Thank God I have a terrible memory. Linda continues, just a few more things since this email is already long. I love how Cordy literally says everything she thinks. Can we show a little appreciation for Xander turning out to be right about who was behind the threat and helping to save everyone in his own Xander way?
I gave the props.
I gave props too. I did. I wasn't mean to him this episode, I don't think, for the most
part. Thank goodness. Maybe it's because I'm here.
No, I would be mean to him regardless. I love being mean to Xander. But, you know,
again, named my son Xander, so of course.
I know.
You're getting over it. Like, I feel as though you have less hate in your heart at this point than you did earlier in the season.
Well, he cheated on Cordy earlier in the season.
Oh, I forgot.
Yeah, I didn't, and I never will. Giles walking into the tree will forever be hilarious to me. There are so many things I love about Earshot, but I've already rambled enough, so I'm shutting up now. And then Linda just said that she's working on getting caught up on Buffy and Felicity so that she can send feedback more. And Linda, I will just live your life. You know, we are here whenever you want to reach out to us. We love getting your emails, but I don't want it to be stressful for you. So, whatever you want to do, we are happy with, as long as you're happy, Linda. Granted, we do love getting your emails. Yeah. But that's our feedback. If you want to send feedback in, which so many of you did this episode, and we appreciate it. So many people, I just want to shout out. So many people gave us the history about what happened with Columbine and like why the episode was delayed. I so appreciate people taking the time to write that stuff, because obviously we don't have the historical context. And it's nice to hear it. It's just interesting to get that along the way. But if you want to send in feedback, shit90spod.com or shit90spod@gmail.com is where you can reach out. Sarah, you ready to hear? I think you already know the title of the next episode because of the weird airing order of all of this stuff. I'm pretty sure you know it is season 3, episode 19, Choices.
Choices, yes.
So I don't know what that's about. The only thing I hear think of when I hear Choices is the RuPaul's Drag Race reference. I can't remember the queen that said it, but just Choices. Choices. I wonder if it's... Okay, wait, can someone remind me? This is their senior year, right? Maybe it's college choice?
Yeah, that could be it, sure.
Like where you're going to, like you choose your future sort of thing?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we have like a character in Faith, like she has a fork in the road. Like, does she choose to go down this path of like evil that she has been, or does she go to the Slayer side of which she believes that she is, she was born to be or destined to be. I think that she has a choice to make. Definitely it could be colleges. We'll see.
Do you think Faith is making it out of this season alive?
No, she's a dead.
She's a dead. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's going to be one of those situations where maybe she comes around and is like, wow, Mayor is actually pretty evil and a bad dad. And so I want to go back to the good side. But then it's like too late and she dies or something. Like that could happen. Yeah. It would be interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. AJ can't tell us anything. And he has such a lovely poker face. We so appreciate it, AJ. AJ, thank you so much for joining us for this episode and giving us a little history lesson on what happened when this aired. Greatly, greatly appreciated. It is not like, you know, school shooting stuff isn't always the most fun to talk about, but this episode was really fun if you take out the intense sadness.
Yeah, and that was the intention of the episode. And I think it's unfortunate that real life sometimes impacts the fiction when the fiction is supposed to be escapism, and sometimes you can't escape from it. So, but it was a pleasure being on, and hopefully have me back again, because I got lots more opinions.
Absolutely.
And the deeper we go, the less there is for me to spoil. So,
exactly. That's the good news for everyone: is the more we watch, the less available there is to spoil. But yeah, we'll be back next week. AJ, do you have anything else going on you want to tell the people about? Anywhere people can find you? Anything like that?
Oh, I've, you know, made the move to Blue Sky, so you can find me, AJ Mass at Blue Sky, and talk about anything you want. I mean, you know, other than that, just doing my thing. It's all good.
Incredible. You could always hear Sarah talking Shameless, previously on Shameless, over on Whirlwind Podcasts. And you could hear me on Talking Shit, talking about Schitt's Creek. And then Stuart and I just launched Look for the Light, where we're covering The Last of Us. So if you're new to The Last of Us, we're covering it spoiler-free, so come join us over there for a little bit of... you know, not lighthearted conversation, because it's a really dark show, but it's really fun. So and next time we'll be back with season 3, episode 19, Choices. Until then, everyone, here endeth the lesson.
Just ask. Shit 90 shows taught me.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.